things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That right so now, much that is going to pass down to their world they talk about. And then some of the history we have is because fantastic enough that we
There we are.
There we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. Doug is well. I am well. We're recording service tonight to be played so that the Sunday after Christmas is online only for church. That makes my wife super happy. It makes a lot of people in the church very happy. A lot of people enjoy getting the extra time. Hey, you get to watch church in your pajamas today and enjoy your family. So looking forward to that. So I got some rehearsal and get that stuff together for this evening. And yeah. I'm looking forward. Christmas is next week.
Yeah, it's like the Super Bowl of your wheelhouse.
I just did an episode on my other podcast on Christmas where I got to talk to the rabbi about Christmas, which was fun.
Sweet.
But yeah, and it's one of those holidays that's super interesting. If you get into some of the history, most of what we do today to celebrate is very medieval. It's 1500, 1600, 1700 traditions. It doesn't go back to like Jesus and the disciples didn't do Christmas this way. I mean, I'm sure he had a sweet birthday party, but you know,
for sure
there were no trees involved, no, you know, any of that sort of kind of stuff. But, you know, even December 25th is a, you know, an interesting thing. You know, a lot of people in Orthodox circles, in other churches will celebrate in January. For a while, they celebrated on March 21st. The pilgrims, when they come to the United States, don't celebrate Christmas. They actually work on the day because they thought it was too pagan, the traditions that had been adopted.
Interesting.
And so they refused to celebrate. It's actually recorded in 1620. They land at Plymouth Rock, and the first Christmas, they work on Christmas Day rather than stop to celebrate because they kind of felt indignant towards it.
All right.
So it's not like a standard, you know, type deal.
So, but the thing is, if you got your time machine and you wanted to travel back to see different things, you would assume that they did the same stuff we did on the same day.
No,
and it's just not the case.
Not the case.
I want to visit Christmas in the year 1200. It'd be like, what the heck is going on here? Nobody.
Nothing.
What?
Yeah. And it's different pockets. And we picked up traditions over the years. I mean, the Christmas tree that we bring into our house, or that the plastic ones that we now have, and the pine spray that we spray to make it smell like Christmas. Your first Christmas tree is until 1539. It was a Reformation priest that they used to have Thor's trees, and there was a Moravian missionary that cut down the Thor tree because it was pagan, and he said you should use those fir trees because they point to the heavens. And so he brought one into.
Let me guess. He also owned a Christmas tree farm.
No, but that would be funny. But no, and then they had, and then those trees started, and now it's obviously adopted almost, you know, at least in America, I'm sure North America, you know, people bring trees into their house. So,
you know what I like though? Like when you do a holiday and it makes other things happen that otherwise wouldn't, like families get together and you do this other stuff, that if Absolutely. You splinter that off, like that's not a natural occurrence where nature's not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it does create what, you know, where what you're really good at is like you put people in the building and you find unity between them, and you have people agree better because they're all in the same building.
No. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, if you go back Old Testament, you know, there are three times a year that God commanded everybody to take a vacation, and they had specific purposes, and there were specific stories and certain things you had to do. You would celebrate Passover, which is right around Easter time for us. But it's a celebration. There's food involved. There's a meal. You're remembering certain things. There's a whole bunch of stuff that God commands the Jewish people to do. Then you have the Feast of Tabernacles, and Tabernacles in the fall. And then, Pentecost comes shortly after Passover. And so you have these different feasts, but literally everyone would travel to Jerusalem. You would hang out. You'd be there with all kinds of people. You'd feast. You'd have a great time. And some of them even, you know, commands adult beverages. And he's like, you guys will relax and you will take time off and you'll leave your fields and you'll come and you'll celebrate these things. And it's very instructive. There's certainly a, you know, a religious kind of bent to it, but then not only that, but then they have the Sabbath where they're told to rest one day a week. You don't work, you eat, you hang out with your family. You know, you go to the synagogue for worship. So, I mean, God built that into his calendar. Our modern sophisticated society is doing everything we can to not have any downtime in our calendar. We want to.
So why is that? Like, what's the pressure then? You know, like if you set me down on a Sunday and said, don't do anything, like I would struggle. Like there would be like free real estate to do something. And I'm like, am I supposed to do this or not? I mean, is it like stuff that you do for a living, your profession that you're not supposed to do, or if it's toil your garden and, you know, do that, like what's it supposed to be?
So, I mean, there's very specific instructions. So, you know, the Ten Commandments, right? Yeah. So, you know, love God, don't take his name in vain, keep the Sabbath holy, and then don't murder, don't commit adultery, the other ones at the bottom. Fascinating is the one he spends the most time on is keep the Sabbath holy. It's given the most letters, the most space. I want to say it's, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 words. It's a couple of sentences, and he gives very specific instructions. You're not to work. Your servants aren't to work. You're not even supposed to think about work.
Let's define work. Because I'm sure I'm breaking this one. I'm almost certain.
They do. They have volumes of laws that they've written to define.
So this
work.
Is defined.
Correct. Like books to define. Okay. You can take so many steps and you can do so many things. Like it's very regimented.
What?
Yes.
Dang.
It's very regimented. You can only do, like, they won't drive, they don't use any technology. So when you go to Israel, for instance, and you go to the hotels on the Sabbath, on Shabbat, they have an elevator that stops at every floor so that you don't have to use electronics and push a button. So there's one elevator that stops on every floor so that you can get off and not break the Sabbath. And they're marked because as a Gentile, I'm going to push the button and go up to the ninth floor. I'm not going to stop on every floor, but they have lights that they will set before the Sabbath and they will stay on the entire time. Hmm. They, you know, certain things with cooking and stuff like that. They can't use flame. There's lots of regiment around it. But I'll tell you, it's one of my favorite things when I go to Israel is I go to a Shabbat dinner in an Orthodox home, and it's beautiful. The ceremony, you know, there's a lot of symbolism with salt and there's wine, Joe. You'll love it.
All right.
and they do a blessing of the wine, and then the patriarch of the family, the father, you know, in some cases the grandfather, the father of the home. Blesses his wife, blesses each of his children publicly in front of everybody that's there. He actually sings or chants a song to his wife. It's
Proverbs 31. This whole thing that we're describing, this feels like it's a lot of work to be responsible to do nothing. Like, doesn't it?
Well, the goal isn't to do nothing.
Okay.
The goal is to rest, and ultimate rest comes. So in Genesis, right, God creates the heavens and the earth in the beginning. The earth was formless and void and darkness and all. And then he speaks and light came, and then he speaks and the ground comes up and he speaks. And we get all the way to day six. He creates man, which is the crown jewel of creation. He puts his spirit inside of him. Then he causes Adam to fall asleep and takes his rib and makes a woman. And then on the seventh day, it says God looked around, saw that all that he made had been very good, and God rested. And it's the first thing that God calls holy is actually a portion of time. And he says, we'll set this period of time apart. Just like he has. And that's actually what's alluded to every time kind of the Sabbath is talked about, is like God rested. It was good for him to rest. It was good for him to be satisfied in his work and not just worried about the next deal or the next thing or the next whatever you got. And so it's very regimented in the sense, but it's regimented to the point where it's designed so that, you know, they play a lot of families will play board games and they'll, you know, read and they'll just unplug from the world. And I know you do this when you go camping and stuff like that, but it's designed as a rhythm of 6 days on, one day off, 6 days on, one day off. And it's crazy because in like Jerusalem, like the city shuts down. Like there's virtually no cars. There's nothing. And it's just, where is everybody? And it's a really kind of cool feel that, probably what it felt like in the 50s on Sundays in, you know, some southern town in Alabama where everything shut down, everybody went to church and, you know, the tumbleweeds are blowing through and there's nobody in any of the stores because everything's closed.
So, I could get more work done on that day because people would be in my way.
Oh.
You're praying for me right now, I feel it.
Well, no, but it's super interesting. You know, Jesus even makes the comment that God didn't make man to obey the Sabbath, but he actually made Sabbath for man so that we would grow and appreciate. And if you look at even the way harvesting is done agriculturally, you know, and you have to have years where your field rests and you rotate your crops on purpose. And if you don't let your field rest, you actually get less yield. So super interesting is it would make more sense, Joe, if you would have all seven fields working, but if you leave one off every year, you get a higher yield of harvest. In the same way, I'll tout Chick-fil-A. Love Chick-fil-A. Fast food, the highest grossing day is Sunday. What day does Chick-fil-A close? Sunday. Who does Chick-fil-A make more money than anybody else? Just about every other fast food restaurant in the country. And they only work 6 days. Their employees love having the seventh day. My wife worked for them for 3 years and loved it. So that principle, I think, is across the board that even when you work out, like, you need a rest day, you need a day for your muscles to recuperate. You need some of that sort of stuff because your body needs to come back. You can't go without sleep for a reason. There's rhythms to these things. And so I don't know how we got on rest, but
no idea.
I wasn't coming in to talk about Sabbath, but
rabbit hole Joe is
Good. That's good. But you know, for you, you've picked literally your camping trips where you've gone has become a Sabbath for your family and for you. And you're going down to Texas for how many days?
14.
And you're going to Sabbath. And I would say probably by about day 7 or 8, you're going to be restless. Mm-hmm. Maybe 6. But that's typically the rhythm. I find it to be true for me. I know some people are like, oh, I went on vacation for 6 months or I went on vacation for a month. And I'm like, I went on my honeymoon. My honeymoon was 8 days. Day 6, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go home. That was my honeymoon. I was having a blast. Like we were in Mexico. We went swimming with dolphins. It was awesome. But I just got to a point where I'm like, all right, you know, I can only sit in the pool so long. Like I can only, you know, snorkeling with these Mexican goldfish and whatever, you know, barracudas.
So on day 7, I'm going to be on South Padre Island.
Okay.
Right across the bay from SpaceX's launch pad. So for the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th day, I'm going to be staring and thinking,
right, you might
how could I go there and get a tour on Christmas Eve? Are they going to do it? No, they probably will not give me a Christmas.
You're going to stow away in something.
I know. I'm totally going to drive. Because you got to drive 45 minutes out of your way to go around the bay to actually visit there.
Oh, wow.
And it's obviously all gated off. You can't get in there. But I'm going to try. Try as much. I'm the same dude.
I'm going to see a WFMJ article. Local business owner Joe Danier arrested in Texas.
Here was something. I went when Debbie and I went on our honeymoon, we did a road trip, and I was driving through Virginia and we happened to drive by Langley Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. So, and I was super interested in aeronautics and CIA and whatever. And so I actually pulled up to the gate of Langley Air Force Base and asked if I could have a tour of it.
Hey.
They promptly said no, and I had to turn around, but still I tried.
The truth is you don't know until you ask. So at totally
get shot. They didn't tackle me. I didn't get on any kind of blacklist. We're good.
No, we had it was interesting. So I had never been really on a military base at all in my life. And then I had some students when I was a youth pastor in northern New Jersey that were at their families lived on the Picatinny Army base there. And there were a few times where like I got invited to like dinner at their house or I was picking them up for a youth event. And I had to have like special badges to get me in, and you're going through the thing. And I'm like terrified. Like, you know, these are not police officers, and police officers are armed, but these were dudes like with heavy guns, and like, and I'm like, oh my goodness,
serious dude, yeah,
don't mess up. And I'm a young 20 something, and you know, driving on the base, I'm like, this is who I am, you know. Stuttering, nervous. And after I did it a couple times, I wasn't, and I got to know the, you know, the,
and they were cool.
But it was the kind of just the feel of everything. I'm like, I've seen these like, you know, cement barriers before. I just see them like on news cycles about Baghdad, you know, here in America.
Yes.
And it's a different feel for sure. So Joe's going to get a tour. Somebody out there, we're going to throw this out into the universe and the atmosphere here. Somebody knows somebody that works for SpaceX, and Joe's going to get a tour when he goes down there on vacation.
So, I mean, maybe even meet Elon, because he's totally going to work.
Time Magazine Man of the Year. That's all I'm saying.
That's awesome. And I follow his Twitter feed pretty.
Oh yeah,
whatever.
He has been so savage lately with Elizabeth Warren and a couple others.
Do you ever look at the hours that he tweets? Like last night, he tweeted like when I was asleep and while I was sleeping, and this morning while I was awake.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, if I were to pick a window of when he actually had some sleep, it's not in there. Like I can't see where it was possible.
He's taking a 20-minute power nap.
That's
like
it. It's got to be. He's not human. He's alien.
I saw. So he obviously did several interviews for the Time Magazine spread and everything. I saw one of the interviews with him, and I just thought it was super fascinating. They asked him, you have all these other car manufacturers getting into electric cars. Does that worry you? Is it going to eat into Tesla's, you know, kind of hold on that business, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They're kind of like trying to get him with like a gotcha question. He was like, no. He was like, I think it's awesome. He goes, we always wanted to change the world. And if it makes the world greener, faster, great. There's room for all of us. And like, next question, like just hit it in a way that I'm like, I would totally answer the same way. Cause people ask me all the time, like, oh, you know, you're worried there's another church moving into town. No, like, great. Like there's 40,000 people here. Like I only have a few hundred to go to my church. Like we could fill our church like 40 times before everyone in the, you know, in the city was reached. So another church, great.
Absolutely.
And I feel the same way with business. Like you can't be concerned. Like everybody's always like, well, is it competition? Like, no. And I loved his response. Was like, no, great. The more to the party. I hope they innovate, you know, hope they develop stuff that we can, you know, I was like, wow.
And there's one philosophy. If you are subscribed that things are finite,
yep,
right, then you're afraid.
Yeah.
And you're protective and you say things like, well, no, a competition eats into my bottom line. If you know that things are infinite, if yep, you're a creator that, you know, innovates and actually creates new real estate, then even if someone comes along, you're just going to innovate into the next environment and you're never afraid of people or things. It's a
yeah,
such a freeing place to be.
Well, and I think that ties into the rest discussion at the beginning, because if you treat your world as finite, you're worried that if I take a day off, I'm going to lose or I'm going to miss out. But if it's infinite, I can take that day off and I'm actually going to be better because of it.
And I'm just the anomaly. Yeah, you did.
I tied that back in. Boom.
Way to go. Taking my arbitrary abstract cloud of noodles and made it into something.
I tied it into something.
I love it. So I was asking Ryan, we had a pretty good discussion the other morning about, you know, when you get of working age, you're probably got more choices than you see us doing right now. You see people going and doing a 9-to-5 job. If you could start creating stuff right now that would give you the work schedule that you preferred and wanted, what would you do? Like, would you do what everybody else is doing, or would you try to do something and maybe you're working less or more or on your own terms? And he started answering the question. It was pretty mathematical. You know, he'd probably, you know, do what everybody else was doing to assimilate into that and whatever. And I said, well, brain fart. It went out of my head. And I, again, okay.
I mean, I'm sure that Charlotte is this way. So we just had a similar conversation. She's into the Babysitter Club books, and there's a series on Netflix that she watches. And she talked to her friends and she's like, we're starting a Babysitter Club and we're going to make money. And she's like, we have 2 years to prepare, because at 12, we're allowed to like watch kids by ourselves and they're all 10. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, I want to have my friends over. We're having a planning meeting. This is what we're doing. And I'm like,
oh, that's beautiful.
Okay. So in the TV show and in the books, the girls buy this like old school phone that like plugs into the wall. And she goes, we need a phone. I'm like, Charlotte, you don't need a phone. She's like, well, they passed out flyers. I'm like, you don't need flyers. I was like, let me help you. There's a beautiful thing called Facebook that wasn't around when those books were written, and Instagram and a lot of other stuff. I said, we can teach you how to use that for business. And I said, you don't necessarily, I said, you know, she was talking about, well, we don't really have any experience. Her one friend doesn't. She said, it's going to go downward. We don't have any experience. And Char's like, I don't know why she thinks that. And I'm like, girl, you do this. Like, you know, I said, right, you know, mommy, daddy will help you with whatever we can. So over Christmas break, her and a couple friends are going to get over and strategize this Babysitter's Club. And she was talking about how she was going to charge people and, you know, well, how much should we charge? And I'm like, I don't know. How much do you think? And she goes, well, how much do you guys pay when we have a babysitter? And, you know, it was a good conversation. So then I got to fast forward. I was like, well, you know, do you want to do babysitting, or are you just doing this because, but like, what would you really want to do? Because my nephew Levi has a soap business and he's done great. I mean, he's gotten his soap into several stores and just did a big donation to Africa, and it's all pretty much Facebook and online. And he does these, I don't know, like little flea market shows and stuff, and they'll come. He's got these little custom bars of soap and he makes them. They got a whole room in their house dedicated to it. And he loves it. And, you know, he's 9, 10, something like that, somewhere in that ballpark. And he's been doing it almost 2 years now. And they, you know, it started out making a few hundred bucks, but now, you know, he just did, I think they sent 300 bars of soap and Christmas gifts over to kids in Africa. Oh, and just cool. Like super cool. And he did it. He raises some money for missions with it. And then, he's learned how to do business with it. It's, you know, it's cool. So I was like, you know, Levi makes a product. I said, what you're offering is a service. And so we got into this conversation, difference between product and service. And then I got to have the conversation, Joe, that I've wanted to have since I've learned more about money. And I said to her, I said, there's really four categories of things you can do with your money. You can spend it, you can save it, you can give it, or you can invest it. Those are really the four things you can do with your money. And I was like, rich people invest money and give money. I was like, saving money, really, you put it in, you're not going to, so you can save a little bit, but ultimately you want to invest it. You want to get it so that it's paying you money back. And she goes, how do I do that? And so we had this whole conversation about what's an asset. And I'm going on to find all these terms, ooh, which was great for me because yeah. I'm like, I have to put this to a 10-year-old. So I have to really understand this for myself because right. I've been consuming a lot of that financial information. And so we had this whole conversation. Listen, yes, you're going to have to pay bills. I was like, but if your goal when you get, if I hand you $100 and the first thing you're thinking about is how can I spend this, you've lost. And I was like, the first thing you need to think about is where am I going to give this and where am I going to invest it? Then with what's left, you can get whatever you want. And I said, and everybody has different percentages is what they think that should be. Should, you know, I said in the church, we teach a principle of tithing. So you give 10% away and then you can figure out if you want to invest 30% or 40%. The more you invest sooner, the more money you'll have down the road now. And so we got in this conversation. I could tell a little bit was like starting to zip a little bit. So I was like, just think of those four things. You want to put it into things that's going to pay you money back. And so she was trying to understand that. So I tried to use our house and I was explaining it and I started to get lost in the weeds, but it was a good first conversation. Awesome. And I was like, man, this is really good. Like nobody ever had this conversation. Like the conversation we had with money was like, all right, you got money. You're going to give it in church. Yeah, I guess I should do that. Okay. What do you want to do with the rest? What are you going to buy? Like that was the conversations I had growing up. My parents opened a savings account for us, but it was not like, here's $100, Doug, this is what I do with my money. This is what you're going to do. There was no training necessarily right. involved. In second grade, I got $73 for my birthday. I was pumped. I brought all $73 with me to school and I bought every snack that they had at lunchtime. Like 15 bags of sour cream and onion chips, nutty bars, ice cream. I was passing it out to all my friends. I thought I was.
You're making it rain.
I was the man until I had about 10 bags of chips left, all this stuff. And the lunch lady and the cafeteria aide was like, Mr. Reed, you're going to have to sit here and eat every one of those. I didn't get to go to recess. I was so sick. I was like, this is horrible. And I spent all my money. And that's one of those things that stands out to me. Like, I wish somebody would have pulled me aside with my $73 of birthday money and been like, listen, if you want this birthday money to be around here in 10 years, like, I know it's only 73 bucks, but if you take 25 of it and do this, that's going to build interest or it's going to whatever. And just taught me some of those things. Yeah. Second grade, I'm probably definitely was not thinking that way, but here I am in my 30s. And I know some of those terms, but my habits were such that I had learned. And now I'm going, all right, how can I make this work for me? How do we invest this? How do we navigate this? You know, each year when, you know, God willing, you get a raise, you look at that and everybody increases what they buy instead of what they invest or what they give. And that's a different mentality to do that. So it was a great conversation, but to come back to what you were saying with Ryan, I don't know if you remember, you were having a conversation about working and you and Ryan were diving into that, but Charlotte's in the same spot. I literally just had this conversation last night.
Well, it was the same vein where if you can plant some seeds on things that aren't required yet, like she doesn't have to make money, so she can pick the way to make money.
Right.
And so I just said, like, well, what if you created stuff where you couldn't tell if you were working or this is just something you like doing? If you have that ability, like you go down in the basement, you make a bunch of YouTube videos, right? You really enjoyed yourself and you felt like you just played a video game. What if you got paid for that? And then would that be something that you would want to do traditionally where you'd want to go to work and make it uncomfortable as possible? Or do you want to do stuff that you really like doing and not be able to tell?
Yeah. One of the portions of that when we were talking about products and services, I mentioned you don't have to make flyers and stuff. I said, honestly, sweetie, I said, you know, for a while you were loving taking pictures. And I had said to your mom privately, you know, maybe we should let her start like a nature Instagram account through Charlotte's eyes. And doing like a, she can call whatever she wants and we'll teach her how to post on there. Not like personal pictures of herself because she's too young for that. But hey, if you want to take pictures of squirrels and other stuff and put it out on Instagram and learn how some of the algorithms work, and who knows, maybe you get followers. And I said, people will pay you for those content. Sometimes you can upload those pictures to different, if they're done right, to different sites, and people will buy those pictures from you. She's looking at me like, really? And I'm like, yes, it's a weird world that we live in. But but that sort of concept that like, you don't have to, because she's terrified to babysit. She asked Sam, she goes, do you think my friends and I over the next couple of years, well, you guys are here in the house, we can just be in charge and we can practice on my brother's babysitting? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, we got to get experience somehow.
Right.
I'm like, you want to boss them around, Mom? I'll go to the other room and watch a movie. You leave us alone. If you have an emergency, come get us.
Yeah, it would be awful if we subscribe the next generation to things we thought were unmovable.
Yeah.
We could just plant those seeds and see what happens. Like, yeah. Be open to change.
Yeah. And that's one of those things as people set goals towards the end of the year, talk about, you know, a new job. It was interesting for Charlotte. She's very much grounded in reality in the sense of how much things, you know, she's asking the right questions to figure that out. And that's because that's the way her brain works. But there were no limits on anything. And she was frustrated with her one friend that kept putting limits on everything. And she was just like, I don't understand why she doesn't think it's going to work. And in my head, I'm going, well, I got about 15 reasons, but I'm not going to tell you. But it was so cool to watch that kind of like, she was frustrated with the lack of faith of one of her friends. It just was like poo-pooing on every idea. And I was like, those are the people that I don't invite to meetings, Char. I was like, I tell them what we're doing after it's already been decided. I'm like, hey, here's your assignment. Okay.
Yeah. And I try to figure out, like, because they exist in every facet of everything that we do, there's got to be a purpose for them. They've got to have some kind of balance, or they got to create some kind of pressure. But it's just like any other tool. They're a very dangerous tool, just allowed to say and do what they want and poo-poo the actual idea. But to keep it safe or to keep it constrained or keep the pressures right or whatever, I think that's the adequate use of those kind of people. I've just have not been able to figure out how to like use them in that capacity, keep them defined in that capacity. Yeah.
It's challenging.
Yeah.
But they certainly allow, they tend to be your deep detail people. And so I find if I can clearly articulate the vision, those are the people that will come and they'll ask the annoying questions, but then they put feet to it and let it walk. I'm not the guy to put feet to things. So I need those people in my world, as frustrating as they are. I just don't need them in the planning phase. I need them in the execution phase.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes
sense.
And
I bet you we make them as awkward around us as we do them.
Absolutely.
You know, those people just think you can do anything type of, you know, thing. I can hear it. I can
feel
it. Oh yeah.
It drives them nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just, and sometimes it drives them nuts because they're insecure. So then it's like, well, yeah, I just don't believe. And, you know, I'm not worth whatever because I don't. Well, no, you have your role, and your role is this, this, and this. My role is this, this, and this. And as long as we're comfortable in our own skin, I think that's where, you know, I'm plenty comfortable when I have, you know, an accountant or detail style person that's going to sit down and ask me the hard question. Like, I like that. But I like it more when they're comfortable in their own skin. I don't need you to try and cast vision for me, just to help me put feet to this. Like, this is what I want to do. All right, well, you're going to need this, this, and this. How are we doing this? Who's executing on that? Those don't frustrate me. Those empower me because you're taking this picture and making it come to life. And so when somebody steps into that space and is comfortable in that, I'm good. It's when they're uncomfortable in that and they're always apologizing for it. I'm like, stop apologizing, just execute.
You know, I have to write the description for this show, and I'm going through my mind right now. I don't even know what I'm going to do. Like, we started off with the history of Christmas, and then we had the Sabbath discussion.
We talked about naps.
Yeah.
we went into working and investing.
Yes.
And now
I think seeds about making your own job and whatever, and now negative people and how they try to squash our dreams. I'm just going to say that. I mean, might as well.
Yeah. This is just hanging out with Joe and Doug on our couch. This is where our conversations go when we're not on the air. We talk about all different things. Which, by the way, speaking of a random thing, update on my crypto world.
Yeah.
So I have invested somewhere around a little over $500. In crypto, and I don't know if you noticed, but I invested and crypto went
okay.
So I think I'm at, like, I put in 540 and I have $471 in there, and so Today, though, it's way up. It was not way up yesterday. Some of these are up 11%, 6%. So they've been very volatile lately, and I think that's because of the stock market and inflation and a bunch of other stuff. I've just been doing more reading and watching, and there's one or two that I'm starting to fall in love with more than the others. Like, I diversified and bought a couple of them. I got $20 in Doge just for Elon. Watching through some of that and going, all right, do I want to put more money in now? I tried to buy the lower it got. I was like, oh, I'll buy $10 more. And then it got more low. I'm like, oh, maybe I should buy $20, you know, and try and do it in a way that now I'm like, oh, maybe I'm making, you know, some money on some of these coins. So just
add
fun
crypto to description. Yep. Okay.
What else can we talk about?
So here's what I've done with it. I've been kind of following. Now, have you sold anything or you've just been all buying?
Just buying it.
Okay. Point. So I've had, like, in the segment that we started talking about this, I've had three buy and sell phases where I unloaded some of it when it was at like 59,000. And then I bought a ton more when it went back down to 47. So if you can have intercycles between those two, where you get a good habit of like knowing where your cost basis is, and when it gets a far beyond 60%, 70% beyond your cost basis, unload a little bit of it so that you free up free capital, so that when it does go back, because it's, if you look at any chart, you have those oscillations between those highs and lows. Absolutely. And just know when, you know, 60% equals, it's probably going to go higher and you're cool with that. You unloaded some and it's going to be lower and you're going to go below. That's like my Sabbath, right? The resting. Let your money rest.
Hey, we tied it back in. I like that, Joe. You got to let your money rest too. I read that the average hold time for crypto is somewhere between 70 and 80 days. And so I thought to myself, I bought November 11th that I was going to get through the holidays. And then in January, that'd be that 70, 80 day mark and see where it's at. So that
is, do you look at it every day?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Multiple times a day. Just as part of my habit. Like, it's part of my habit now of like, I get up in the morning, go to the bathroom, come over. Because the kids are going to ask me what the weather is. And if there was a football game, they want to know the score. So I usually look at both those things. And then I glance at that bank account and, you know, the other stuff, just so I know.
All right, let me give you some update. And I'm going to start texting you when I start making these moves, so you know my timing wise, and you can ask some questions about why I did it more than what I did.
Teach me, Obi-Wan.
So Doge, I put about like $2,500 into Doge around the same time. I probably put $500 when we talked, and I put about $2,000 more since then.
Okay. Yeah. And it dipped pretty low.
So these two, Doge and Bitcoin, are really different in philosophies, because Bitcoin, there's only going to be so many of them ever manufactured. Doge is infinite. They're going to keep printing Doge coins forever. Right.
Okay.
Now, remember I told you, like, Bitcoin really is not going to be a currency because it's too slow.
Yeah.
Doge is what Bitcoin is not. So they're both going to really going to do two different things. So Doge is going to be super spendable, because it works that way, but it's not really a good store of value because it's inflationary. There's more of it that's created every single day, but it's a consistent set of inflationary principles where it's only so much, but it's so much every single day that you own it.
Gotcha.
Right. So it may be going up in value, but there's more created so that it kind of goes down in value. So I expected that it's probably maybe on par. Like, if it goes to a dollar, it's going to be rough to go beyond the parity between the US dollar if it gets spent.
Yeah, I think it's what, like 19 cents right now or something like that. Yeah.
Bitcoin, on the other hand, is deflationary. So it's going to continually increase in value because there's just not going to be any more printed up. Like 90% of everything, it's already been printed at this point. So
it's the gold standard versus modern economics.
Not going to be a currency.
Yeah.
Doge, probably going to be a currency.
Gotcha.
And then go from there.
Interesting. Yeah, I bought, I like Ethereum a lot. I've enjoyed learning about that a little bit. And I bought a little bit of Cardona, and just spreading it out a little bit, and did some, those were kind of like brief flyovers. But now that I've been in it a little bit, I'm like, well, what is this one going to do? And who's interested, and who's talking about it? And I think the next couple of years will tell the story in terms of who's going to be a currency, who's going to be used for large long-term investments, who's going to be used in the various industries. Interesting thing is the NFTs and this kind of digital real estate. I don't get it. But somebody bought like a piece of digital property for like millions of dollars. Yes. That's so strange to me. And then
it's a little abstract.
It's very abstract. And then Gary V came on and said he made like 60 stickers. There were these NFT stickers, and in 30 days sold them for like $2.4 million, something like that. And I was just like, who's buying digital stickers for millions of dollars? Like, I don't understand the concept of it. The only thing that somebody said that made any sense to me was, you know, creating like almost like playing cards, like tradable assets in the sense of like receipts or like, you know, if you buy from a very specific company or whatever, and then that company sells to something else and blows up, that those digital pieces of art can be worth money.
All right. So here's basically what we're going to do in the new year. You and I are going to issue an NFT. We're going to put one together. The best way to learn about it is just to one.
I'm in.
And we'll go through the process of establishing it, showing how it gets lodged in the blockchain. And, you know, it's
totally curious now.
All right. Totally gonna do it there. Right. And so I'll pick something.
It's gonna be like kinda, our heads, like
it's kind of silly. Well, I'll pick something nice and silly so that we know that it didn't really have a market value, right? Only because it was a market. And that's what you're seeing, like all these really inflated things. It's brand new, right? Yeah. So it's because of what crypto did for values that exploded when you got mass adoption. Now, if you do something on the small scale and it ends up being big, you know it's going to be on the big scale when you have mass adoption. So it's going to be easier to see this than to explain it anyhow. Early on, when I explained Bitcoin the first time with you, I said that it was probably like a semi-trailer more than a currency. Remember I said like it carries important things that is provable? That's sort of like what we're talking about here. If you took something and you wanted to like you, I own this only if I have it in my hand. I walk away from it and it cannot be mine. It is stealable. Somebody else can claim ownership and they can walk away with it. NFTs is owned by you. It can't be taken from you. It can't be stolen from you. It is
nobody
yours.
Nobody can hack in and steal it.
Nobody can hack it, right?
Really?
Once it's yours, it's yours. And so it's a digital asset. Like it's taking physical things in the world and translating it to its digital counterpart. And then you own the digital counterpart, which translates back up to a physical counterpart. That's really what it is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Joe and I are going to have an NFT.
NFT. Be fun.
Add that to the
every,
show.
Every self-development listener that we have will be replaced by someone completely different. Hey.
No, that's cool. Yeah, we could probably chop this episode up into like little like 5-minute segments with Joe and Doug on different topics because we really hit a
welcome to December 16th, part 9.
All right. Well, before we hit another topic, we should probably wrap up and we will see you next week. Appreciate you listening.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.